Today's shiur, Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Hei. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Though the Daf that we will be learning today is Daf Mem Hei, the beginning of the Shiur will start from the Mishnah that appears at the bottom of Mem Dalet Amid Beis. We're continuing with the theme of court execution by Skila. Hoya rochok mi beis haskila arba amos. The condemned is within 4 amos of the point of execution. Mafshitin oisoi es begodov. He is stripped of his clothing. Hoish, when dealing with a male condemned, then mechasen oisoi milifonov. A loincloth is provided, covering the front part of his body. Vo'isha milafonea u'me'acharea. And a small piece of cloth is provided for the woman who is to be stoned, covering her private parts from in front and from in back. But otherwise, she is basically without clothing. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Division that we just made, this distinction between man and woman, this is Rabbi Yehuda's approach. Let us emphasize, according to Rabbi Yehuda, both are naked, with the exception of this small piece of cloth that covers the private parts. V'chachomim omrim ho'ish niskal orum, v'ein ho'isha niskeles aruma. The Chachomim disagree and say that only a male is stoned while naked, but a woman is stoned while clothed. The top of Mem Hei Omid Aleph, Tanu Rabbanan, we see a Tanaic source, and in our marking system, all Tanaic sources are featured in frames. The topic heading that we have assigned to this is found in the margin, the Nosei, Niskolim, those that are stoned, Arumim Oy Levushim, are they naked or clothed? The source continues, Tanu Rabbanan, Ho'ish, Mechasin Oysoi, Perik Echad Milafonov, Uve'isha Shnei Prokim. Bein milafonea, bein ma'acharea, v'pnei shekula erva, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. This source parallels our Mishnah that says that a man is provided with a loincloth for covering him from in front, the woman with two pieces of cloth covering both sides of her from the front and the back, because the woman is considered kula erva. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. V'chachomim omrim ho'ish niskal orum v'ein ho'isha niskelas arum. According to the Chachomim, like we saw in the Mishnah, that only a man is naked, the woman is fully clothed. Mai tamayu derabbanan. We've squiggle underlined the Rabbanan, and this will enable you to contrast this with what we see later for Rabbi Yehuda, who's also squiggle underlined a few lines later. What is the reasoning for the Rabbanan? Omar kro v'rogmu oisoi. And he is stoned. Mai oisoi. What is the intent of that word, which is a pronoun referring to him? Ilema oisoi veloi oiso. If you're to think it means that it's to the exclusion of a woman, meaning him and not her. V'hoksiv. But the pasuk says v'hotzeso es ho'ish ha'hu oi es ho'isho ha'hi. Pasuk makes reference to man and woman, and we've dashed underlined O S O Ishahi. Elo my oisoi. So, what is the intent of the word oisoi? Oisoi belok susoi ha oisa biksusa. It serves to memayate a man that only a man, the male, is without clothing, but the female is with clothing. Rebbe Yehuda Omer. Oisoi beloi ksuso. When the pasuk says him that he is stoned without clothing, loishno ish veloishno isha. There is no distinction made between man and woman. The Gemara now asks a question, and you'll see the length of the question is indicated by the long question marking with the encircled kuf to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text and a vertical dashed line indicating the length. L'meimra d'rabonon chayshi lihuhura v'rabiuda lo chayish lihuhura. Before we continue, we have a subtopic title heading, Tatnose Yishuv, a resolution, listira, to what will appear as a contradiction, Bein Rabbi Yehuda v'Chachamim ben Eskolin, Rabbi Yehuda v'Chachamim besota. We have Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in our Mishnah, and Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in Maseches Sota. We'll present the seeming contradiction and eventually resolution. So it seems from our Mishnah that the Rabbonan who say in the case of stoning that the woman is clothed, and that's because they are choshesh, they're worried about negative thoughts that could arise upon seeing the unclothed woman. V'Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the woman is unclothed just as the man is, lo chayesh lihura. He takes the position that we don't have to take into consideration the negative thoughts, the immoral thoughts that one may have upon seeing her unclothed. Well, if that be the case, v'ho ipchos shamana lehu. But we know these two opinions to have said the opposite, this non. We feature now a Tanaic source from the context of Isha Sota. This is the topic of the immoral woman, a married woman who is suspected of behaving immorally with another man, and there is a process without getting into the many details, but the woman is brought to the Beis HaMikdash, and she drinks from special water, and if she's guilty, she will die as a result of that. In the process of dealing with the woman in the Beis HaMikdash, there's the following is described. HaKoyin oiches bivagodeha. The Koyin grabs the woman by her clothing, the suspected woman. Im nikru nikru, im nifru nifru. If the clothing get torn or tattered, so be it. Ad shimagale es liba, till the point that her body is exposed. Visosir es sara, and her hair is undone if she has braided hair. Her hair braids are undone. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im hoya liba na, if she had a beautiful body, lo hoya megaleu, then it would not be revealed. It was unlike the Chachamim, the Tanakama here, the first opinion that says if her body is revealed by the Kohen having grabbed her clothing, doesn't matter. According to Buda, it does matter, and we would restrain from such an action of revealing her body. V'imhoya sa'ro na, and if her hair is beautiful, lo hoya sosro, it would not be undone. At this point, then, you see, Rabbi Yehuda takes the opinion that we are concerned about her remaining fully clothed, where we saw Rabbi Yehuda in the context of stoning that said she is unclothed. Omar Rabo. Rabo, at this point in the Gemara, comes to resolve the seeming contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda, and he explains. Hosam, in the case of the Sota, Hainu Taimo, the reason that Rabbi Yehuda is choshesh, that he's concerned about her body being revealed, is Shemo Teitzim Mibezin Zakov, she might end up leaving the procedure innocent. And if that be the case, imagine if she had been revealed, if her body had been shown, had been visible, people saw her, primarily the Kohanim that were in the Beis HaMikdash would have seen her, and then this woman leaves innocent from the Beis HaMikdash, v'yisgaru ba pirchekuna, and the young Kohanim will be aroused upon seeing her. Hocha, in the case of the stoning, where Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned, ha miktala, she's killed. And there's no more fear of her arousing negative thoughts later on. V'chitema osi lizgure bachurnaisa. You might say, but even so, if people saw her unclothed, they'll come to be aroused and have immoral thoughts concerning other women because they saw this particular woman unclothed. That's not a fear. Omar Rabo Gemiri, we have a tradition. Ein yetzahara sholeit, the evil inclination does not have control, elo b'mi she'enov ros, except for those that one beholds, that one sees. So in the case of the stoning, Rabbi Yehuda is not worried. The stoned woman, she's killed and done with. other women are not going to be the source of negative thoughts because the stone woman was seen naked. Omar Rava, are you suggesting that Rabbi Yehuda, which Rabbo just resolved, that Rabbi Yehuda had posed a difficulty or a contradiction and the Rabbonan don't? That's not true. The Rabbonan also posed, there was posed a contradiction within their Shita as well. In the case of the Sota, they were not concerned with her being revealed. In the case of the stoning, the Rabbonan were concerned. Ella Omar Rava. Rava comes up with his approach. He says, as far as the contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda's, there is no problem, as was already explained by Rabba. The Rabbonan ad Rabbonan nami lo kashya. With regard to the stira that we posed in the Rabbonan, there's also no contradiction. And let us emphasize, as we will see, the Rabbonan are not concerned with, in other words, their consideration is not hirhur, is not the issue of negative thoughts upon having seen a naked woman. Rather, their concern is one of effect on the public. How do we convey a sense of fear to the public? A fear of violating mitzvahs. Omar Krah, it says regarding the regarding pritzus, regarding immoral behavior, including things like the issue of the sota. It says, "V'nivosru kol ha'noshim v'lo te'osena kezi maskena," and they shall all be warned, put on notice, and not practice immorality. As a result of that, as a result of the need for warning against immorality, and sota being a part of that topic, we have to mevaze her, we have to embarrass her, and that will shock the public, and that will serve as a warning against immoral behavior and lifestyle. Hacha, in the case of skila, there's no need to have her unclothed or to have her exposed, because as far as our goal is concerned, the goal of being put on notice or warned, ein l'cho yisur gadol mizeh, there is no greater warning and fear technique than being killed mamish, than literally being killed. And as a result of that, there's no need to unclothe her. You might suggest, let's do both. If our interest is to create a sense of fear of the law in the hearts of the masses, so in addition to her being killed, let's also unclothe her. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Bar Avua, Omar Kro. Rav Nachman cites a pasuk that says, "V'yohavto l'reacha kamocha," which is translated as, "You shall love your friend as yourself." But from here we learn, bror lo misa yofe, choose, even for the condemned, a proper type of death. And in this context, the proper type of death means without extra bizoyon, without extra embarrassment. What does that mean for us then? It means that let her be, that the misa yofe will be while she is clothed. But let us just recall for a moment, this idea of death while being clothed, that is according to only one opinion. And that being death while being clothed is the opinion of the Chachamim. And not all agree with that. The Rabbi Yehuda didn't agree. Lema de Rav Nachman Tanoihi, should we suggest that Rav Nachman's comment is the subject of Tanaic controversy? Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, we know that she stoned while unclothed as well. Someone says, no, look, we don't have to set up Rav Nachman's teaching of Bror Lo Misa Yofe as a machlokes tanoim, as a Tanaic controversy. Rather, the Kuli Alma Islehu de Rav Nachman, everyone agrees with the principle of Rav Nachman, that means choose a Misa Yofe, choose a proper type of death. However, the question is, what is considered a proper type of death? V'hocha v'hocha miflagi. The following is the subject of controversy amongst the Tanoim. Mar Sovar, the Rabbonan hold, Bizyonu de'inish adifo le'itfei minicho de'gufei. It is of greater concern to a man the issue of being embarrassed than bodily comfort. And according to the Chachamim, that translates into the following: that a woman would prefer to be stoned while killed, while clothed, and even though the fact that she's clothed is going to make death set upon her a little slower, nevertheless, she is saved from the embarrassment. And that's the Misa Yofe. However, Rabbi Yehuda says otherwise. Umar Savar, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Nicho de Gufe, bodily, physical comfort, Odif, is of a greater concern, Mi Bizyoni, than being embarrassed. And hence, since death will set in faster when the person is unclothed, the impact is felt more immediately or more suddenly without clothing on. That's a greater consideration, and hence that's the Misa Yofe according to Rabbi Yehuda. But as you can see, everyone agrees with the principle of Misa Yofe as Rav Nachman taught. Mishnah. Beis Haskila Hoya Gavoya Shtei Koimois. The height of the push-off point at the Beis Haskila, at the execution site, was 2 person heights. Echod min ha'edim doichvoy al mosnov. One of the witnesses pushes him by the hips. Ne'pach al livoy. If the victim or the condemned falls face down, hoichvoy al mosnov. He's then flipped over facing up. Ve'im meis ba yotza. If he dies with this impact, then that's it. They have fulfilled the requirements. Ve'im lav. If he doesn't die at this point, Hasheni noitel esoeven venoisnoi al liboy. The second witness takes a stone and places it upon his heart. Im meis bo yotza. If that causes the victim to die, the condemned to die, then they don't need to do any more. Ve'im lav regimosa b'chol Yisrael. If the first stone that was placed upon the condemned doesn't kill him, then the rest of the stoning will take place at the hands of the assembled. Shneamar yad ho'edim tia boi borishona lahamiso v'yad kol ha'om b'achrona. The first stoning is done by the witnesses, and the second is done by the rest of the people. Tana, this Tanaic source elaborates or continues from what the Mishnah had said. The Mishnah mentioned that the Beis Haskila was 2 person heights, the Koima Shaloi plus the person's own height, Hare Kan Shalosh. There are 3 person heights from which that are responsible here for his fall. In other words, when the person is pushed off this little cliff, there's his own height, which accounts for 3 amos, and 2 more person heights, another 6 amos, for a total of 9 amos. When we talk about this amount of distance, you're talking about if you take 3 amos and multiply that by tfochim, that each amma has 6 tfochim in it. So 1 person height is 3 times 6, 18 tfochim. So all told, we'd be talking about 3 times 18, which would be 54 tfochim of height. The Gemara asks, in order to create or to ensure death, do you really need to have that much height? Umibo inon kule hai. Do you really require so much viraminu? We have a Tanaic source found in Maseches Bava Kama, which describes a pit into which an animal may fall, and the depth of the pit is expressed in this source as being 10 tfochim, and that being capable of causing death. So we will see from this source that a depth of 10 tfochim is sufficient. You don't need to have what we described just before of having a cliff of 2 person heights and the person height as well. Umi bo inon kulei hai. Do you require so much?
V'raminu, we have the following contradictory source, ma bor shuhu kedei lohomis asora tvochim, just like a pit that's capable of imposing death is of 10th from death, af kol kedei lohomis asora tvochim, so to any drop, even if it's not a pit, but any fall of 10th tvochim, if someone is responsible for that in public, the owner of that item or that area will have to pay for damages or pay for the death. So we see 10 tefachim is sufficient. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Bar Avua, Omar Kro, V'yohavta l'reacha kamocha. Just like we saw cited in the Gemara above, when dealing with method of execution, we want to have a proper type of execution. If it wouldn't sound like an anomaly, we would say a pleasant execution. But that's what the idea behind Misa Yofa is, and therefore we want to have a quick death. And therefore, 10 tefachim, though it's capable of killing, it's not necessarily going to be an instant death. The Gemara then asks, if we're interested in instant death, then yachi ligbei tvei, then let's have even a higher cliff than we described. So Gemara says, no, if it's too high, then the mishum de minvel, it will be disgusting. In other words, the body could possibly end up becoming deformed, and that's considered unacceptable. Echon minu edim dochvo. We said in the Mishnah that when the condemned reaches the execution site, one of the witnesses pushes him off. Tana rabbanan minayin shebedchia. From where do we know that when dealing with the stoning form of execution, that part of it has to do with pushing off into a fall? Tama lomar yoro. This is a pasuk that is found in Parshas Yisro, at the describing Matan Torah, at which point in time there was a prohibition of drawing unto Mount Sinai while the Torah was being given. The pasuk says, and we've written it on in the margin, pasuk in Perek Yud Tes, pasuk Yud Gimel, Lo Siga Bo Yad. There should be no one should touch the mountain. Ki Soko Yisokel. O yoro yore. The penalty being, if one does draw onto the mountain, it says sokol yisokel, o yoro yore. The word yoroi, Rashi points out, has to do with being cast or shoved into a fall position, into a falling form. Rashi quotes a pasuk from Kriyas Yamsuf, yoro vayom, which is means cast into the sea. So the Brisa began by asking a question, from where do we know that there's a pushing off or a dropping of being cast into something? That's from the fact that by Matan Torah we find Yoro is mentioned, and it should be pointed out that the penalty by Matan Torah was also a penalty of stoning. So in the case of stoning, we find this accompanies that particular form of execution. And that, as we saw in the Pasuk, Shmos Yud Tes Pasuk Yud Gimel, Uminayin Shebeskila, how does one know that a stone is used? Tamadomar Sokol, because the word sokol appears, and Rashi points out that the word sokol is associated with stones, as one sees in a pasuk in Dvarim Chof Beis, where it says, and Rashi quotes this, v'soklua anshe iro ba'avonim. So you see the word v'soklua and the word avonim. Uminayin shebeskila ubedechia. From where do you know that both methods, if necessary, are to be used? Tamar lomar sokol yisokel o yoro yore. From the fact that the pasuk mentions both of them, it's coming to include both of them, and one should not think for a second that it means either or. Because if the pasuk were trying to convey that idea, Rashi says it would have stated the pasuk differently. It would have said ki sokol o yira, but the fact that it's the expressions are doubled up is coming to include both of them as being legitimate forms of execution. Uminayin shimeis b'dechia yotza. From where do you know that if he died upon being shoved off the cliff, that they don't need to do anymore? Tamalomar oy yoro yore. The word o comes to lechalik, to tell me either one or the other. In other words, after doing one, you don't need to do the other. Minayin she'af ledoros kein. How do you know that all stoning, all those guilty of stoning are to be treated the same way? Because the pasuk so far that we've been dealing with, which is a source for stoning, but it was a one-time event in history. So how do you know that it is to be practiced this way all the generations? Talmud Lomar, Soko Yisokel. The yud of the second word, Yisokel, is of a future tense. Hence, it shows us that even in future generations, this is the way to do things. The Imlav, we said that if he did not die as a result of the fall, Eid Hasheni Noitel Esoeven, the second witness, picks up the stone. Now, it sounds like that the stone is able to be picked up by one person. So the Gemara asks on that, no tail, which is, does he take it by himself? V'hotanya, we have a Tanaic source that seems to indicate otherwise. Rabbi Shimon ben Elozer Omer, Evan hoisasham masui shnei b'nei odam. There was a stone there whose weight was that which would require two people to lift it. Notlo v'noisno alibo. It would be taken and placed on the condemned heart. Im meis ba yotza. If that causes his death, then good. Then they don't need to do any more. The Gemara now asks, Ule tamech, if you're asking from this source, tikshi lo hi gufa, the source inherently is difficult. It says, masui shnei b'nei adam, it's of a weight that would require two people to carry it, and yet the same source says, not lo v'nosna libo, that he takes it in the singular, he takes it and places it on his heart. So not only, instead of asking on the Mishnah, the Brisa itself is inherently difficult. Ella. So the resolution is as follows. De madli lo bahadi chavre. Madli means picked up. It's raised together with his friend. In other words, the two witnesses have to pick up the stone. However, the idea of the singular is in the following. Vishodi lo ihu. But one of them throws it or casts it upon the condemned. And the reason for the one person doing it is ki hechi detesi merazia. But that through that, it will come down with force, because when one person is throwing it or casting it, there's no opposing force, whereas the case of two people were doing it, each one is pushing from a slightly different direction, thereby reducing the force of the fall. V'im lav regimoso b'chol Yisrael. The mission indicates that if after the fall and the casting of the first stone, the person is still alive, so subsequent stones are cast by the rest of the assembled. The Gemara asks for Hatanya. There's a source that says, "Me oylam lo shana ba'adam." There was never a need for a second stoning, a second stone. So why does our mission indicate that if the first stone was insufficient, so the rest would participate? The Gemara answers, there's no question to begin with. Mi koamina de Ovid, was it ever said that it was done? All the Mishnah said was de e mitzrich, if necessary, koamina. That's what was said. But in fact, as the Brisa says, there was never a need for a second stone. Omar Mar, Evan Hoysa, we saw above, the source that we saw on the third line from the top. This you can, of course, spot by using the arrows that are provided in to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, one over here and the other pointing to the third line from the top. It said in the source that a stone was there, and the implication, what's implied here is that the stone was always there. We're now going to introduce a source that says that when a person is executed with stoning, the stone that was used to execute him is actually buried. So the expression of Evan Hoysa that the stone was there seems incongruous. The Gemara asks, V'hatanya, we have a source that features all the different types of execution implements, that they were all buried. Achas Evan Shiniskabo, whether it be the stone through which he was stoned, the Achas Eitz Shinitla Olav, in the case of stoning victims, their bodies are hung up on a plank, on a beam,
until sunset, that beam is known as the Eitz Shenitlo, that he was suspended from that as well, the Echad Sayef Shneragbo, and the sword through which someone was executed, the Echad Sudo Shenechnagbo, or the piece of material that a person was, that the condemned was strangled with, Kulon Nikborin Imo. We've dashed underline this because this is the main point of the source, that all of these implements are buried with the defendant, with the condemned. As a result of that, it's hard to understand what was meant by the expression Evan Hoysa, there was a stone there. That implies that it was there all the time. Loi Tzricha, Mishnah's, this source's teaching that we saw three lines from the top, is necessary to Misakni Umaisi Achrini Chilufayo. That there was always a stone there means that after one was used, they always brought a replacement stone to be there for the next case, if necessary. But there, in fact, there always was a stone, but it wasn't the same stone. We also said in the, we just learned in the source, which was appeared two lines up, Nikborin Imo. The Gemara is now going to ask on that, is that really so? The expression Nikborin Imo implies that it was buried together with the body in the same spot. So the Gemara asks, Nikborin Imo, v'hatanya, but we see Ein Nikborin Imo. Another source says they're not buried with him. So there's a contradiction in these two sources. Omar Rav Papa, my Imoi, the expression Imo means Imo betfisoso. Betfisoso means within four amos of the condemned body. So that both sources are correct. One source that says Ein Nikborin Imo means the items that we featured above are not buried literally with the body in the same spot, but they are buried within four amos. We have a slash mark in our marked Gemaras indicating that the following piece of Gemara is a new trend of thought. We have a title heading and a sugya that is going to be characterized by numerous geometric forms. The topic heading is Din Shel Shmuel, the law, the ruling of Shmuel, that says Nikta Yad Ha'edim, if the prosecuting witnesses, if their hand is cut off before the execution, in other words, they testified as while complete individuals. But before the execution was to take place, one of their hands, of the witnesses, got cut off. Potter, the defendant, is freed. And the reason for this is Bo'inan Kro Kidechti, because Shmuel says one must take the psukim literally. And we'll see the literal application very soon. So let us first read Shmuel's din, and then go back to explaining the role of the different geometric forms. Omar Shmuel, Nikta o Yad Ha'edim, if the hand of the witnesses is cut off, Potter, the condemned, will no longer be subject to execution. Mai Taimo, why is that? Deboino, because we require Yad Ha'edim Tie Boi Borishono. Veleko. The pasuk describing the execution says that the hand of the witnesses shall be the first upon him. And we saw that in the Mishnah that the one of the witnesses pushes him off with his hand. So if his hand is not there, we can't fulfill what the pasuk says. And if we can't fulfill what the pasuk says, the case is off. In other words, he's released. We emphasize, and that's a function of what's called Kro Kidichtiv, we require the pasuk to be taken literally. At this point, you see a triangle. And in fact, as you skim along, you'll see numerous other triangles. And if you keep skimming, you'll notice the triangles actually flip over, pointing in the opposite direction. So we look at our Mivne heading, the structural note in the outside margin. The triangles with the point facing up, Kushios al Shmuel, they represent kashis on Shmuel, difficulties on his shita. later in the sugya, we'll notice they flip over. Those will be sources, makaros, siwa l'shmuel. More will be introducing sources that will actually serve to support Shmuel. Shemehem mashma, from those sources, it will seem deba'inan kro kedichtiv, that we require psukim to be taken as they are written, literally. A little bit later in the Gemara, we will be noticing additional geometric forms. When we get to them, we will pause and introduce their role. At this point, we turn back to the Gemara with the first triangle. Elomeata, Edim Gidmin de Meikara, Hachinami de Psili. If two witnesses appeared in court and they are people that are missing hands, are you going to tell me, those are Gidmin, people missing hands, people that at the outset are missing hands, are they too not acceptable to serve as witnesses? If that were so, that they're not acceptable, the question will be, why does Shmuel feature only the case of their hands being cut off in the interim? He should have just said, Edim Gidmim Psulim, but he didn't say that. But on the other hand, if you're requiring the pasuk to be taken literally, so he should have said that. He should have said, Edim Gidmin are pasul. The Gemara says there is a difference. Shaini Hasam. The Omar Kro Yad Ha'edim Shehoisa Kvar. What the pasuk insists on is that the witnesses that conduct the execution should be in the same physical state as they were when they originally came in. Therefore, if you have witnesses that originally came in missing hands, and at the point of execution they haven't changed one bit, they're still as they were, we are fulfilling what the pasuk requires. The only restriction is that there should be no change from the way they were at the beginning. Meisvei. Once again, we raise a question on Shmuel. The following source. Kol mokoim shiyaiduhu shnayim v'yomru. Any situation where you have a convicted man who got out, so to speak, is on the loose, and two witnesses say as follows: v'yomru me'iden anu be'ish ploni, we testify about so and so, shenigmar dino bebeis ploni, that he received a guilty verdict in such and such a court, uploni uploni edov, and so were his witnesses. In other words, the people speaking are not the original witnesses that testified to convict him. These are other guys, and as a result of this, hare ze yohareg. If they catch the guy and they've caught him in some other location, he will be sentenced to execution. What do we see here? That even though these are not the original witnesses, he still will be subject to execution. Which, in other words, we see that we do not require the pasuk to be taken literally. In other words, we have a change from what was original is not what is taking place right now. These are totally new people, and yet it's acceptable enough to see him executed. So the Gemara answers, Tirgum Shmuel. Shmuel responds, Behein Hein Edov. This source that we just read that featured testimony about a guy on the loose is actually a reference to the original witnesses are stating this testimony. We now encounter a new geometric form, the house form. We will notice that this form, as you go down the Omid, will appear in two different directions. The Mivneh instructions on the side, the structural note, indicates this marking and says, Mi bo'inon kro kedichtiv. Do we really require the psukim to be taken literally? And the fact that this form appears in different directions indicates hoichochos l'shnei hakivunim. Proofs in both directions. So, at this point, we will see an attempt to show that we do not require kral kedichtiv. We do not require psukim to be taken literally. Notice in the wider lines of the Gemara,
the next time this form appears, it'll be inverted, at which point the Gemara says, Umi lo boinan kral kedifti? Is it so that we do not require? In other words, we will see cases where we do require psukim to be taken literally. So at this point, when we question it, we're in effect also asking a question on Shmuel, because he was of the opinion, you do take things literally, and here we're going to challenge that. Umi boinan kral kedifti? Do we require such an approach to accept the psukim as they are stated literally? V'hatanya. We have the following source. And we have a triangle here because this, again, poses a difficulty to Shmuel. It says, Mois yumas hamake roitzeachu. The pasuk is talking about a murderer. The murderer is subject to death. Ein li ela b'misa haksuva bo. If I didn't know any better, I would think that the only way one is allowed to kill him is through that which is written by him, namely the Saif method, the execution by the sword. From where do you know that if for some reason you cannot execute him with the prescribed method, that you kill him any way that you can? Talmud Omar, Mos Yumas Hamake Mikomakom. Have him killed anyway, any possible way. What we see from here, we see that the psukim are not to be taken as they are said. Would rather, all ways are possible. So we're not limited to Kra Kedichtiv. Notice the note that we have in under our Mivneh heading. This expression surrounds the expression mikomakom, which is explained mimisim b'chol derech efshri. We kill any way possible. These markings, the elu yavlitu ha derotzeach v'gur hadam havushnek suvim haboim keichod. We will see the value of this diamond marking in a moment. In other words, we will show the phenomenon of shnek suvim haboim keichod. But in the meantime, we have a problem. The problem being that we are not limited to the literal reading of the psukim. So the Gemara answers, "Shiny hasam demakro mos yumos." That case is different because it's built into the pasuk itself the double expression, which serves to include other methods. However, in the absence of that special reboy, that special means of inclusion, we will be limited to Kra Kedichtiv, as Shmuel says. The Gemara asks, V'ligmar minei, why not use this as a basis to learn in general, and in fact not restrict ourselves to Kra Kedichtiv, to the pasuk being taken literally? The Gemara says, no. Mishum dahavu, dahavi rotzeach v'gol adam, shnei k'suvim haboyim ke'echod. Because we have two sections that come to teach me the same thing, namely that the section dealing with the murderer and the section of the Torah dealing with the avenger, the Goyal Hadam. And they come to teach the same conclusion. And as a result of that, when you have two parshas coming to teach me the same conclusion, the following rule applies. V'chol shnei k'suvim haboyim ke'echod ein molamdin. Whenever you have this, we say that it's limited to those topics and we do not learn from them to other places. We now see a bracketed section. These brackets are not designed necessarily for skipping, but rather, if they're described in the inside margin, b'soch hasagrayim muva horeka. Within this bracketed section of Gemara is brought the background, sherotzeach v'gol adam, that these two sections, havushnek suvim haboyim ke'echod. After the bracketed section, the Gemara will then ask a question in the opposite direction, whereby we see sources that do necessitate psukim to be taken literally. With that having been said, let us go through the bracketed section. We just mentioned that the topics of Rotzeach and Gal Hadam, the topic of murderer and topic of avenger, are two parshias that come to the same conclusion, and we do not learn from those to other places. Rotzeach Hodamor, we already featured the topic of Rotzeach in the last Tanaic source. We also saw a diamond at the end of that source.
Gael Adam, Mahi, what's the topic of the Avenger that reaches the same conclusion as the case involving the murderer? The topic of Gael Adam is in the case that a murderer committed a murder, the victim's nearest relative has a right to avenge the death of his relative and pursue and kill the murderer. So it says as follows, Desanya, Goel Hadam Yomis Es HaRotzeach, the avenger shall kill the murderer. Mitzvah B'Goel Hadam. That's a mitzvah for him to fulfill. Uminayin She'im Ein Loi Goel. From where do you know that if the victim doesn't have a an identifiable near relative, Shebezdin Ma'amidim Loi Goel, that Bezdin appoints someone to serve in that capacity? Shenemar, the pasuk says, Befigoi Boi Mikol Makoim, that the murderer is attacked by him, Befigoi Boi. Him being anybody, but the anybody means someone appointed by the court that whereby we go beyond the restriction of the Goel Hadam himself. So what do we see from this? We see another occasion, just like in the case of murderer, that we seek the retribution, so to speak, anyway, through all methods, if you will. Another form of expansion. So these two topics are cases where we do not have where we have a ribui, or we have a phenomenon of kro that's not kidichtiv, but we will not learn from this to other topics because of the fact that these are two issues that come to the same conclusion. And that's what we try to accomplish with our diamond marking, to bring out the point that these are shnei ksuvim haboim keachod. Omer le mark shisha braid Rav Chisda the Rav Ashi. Umi lo bo inon kro kidichtiv? Could one suggest that we do not require psukim to be taken literally? In other words, we're now going to strengthen the position taken up by Shmuel. For Hotnan, we have the following source that deals with the Ben Sorer Umore, the topic of the wayward son. Without getting into details, this will be featured later in the Masechta, but we're dealing with a child who's between 13 and a couple of months, and he was warned not to continue in certain negative behavior, including theft, specifically theft and the purchase of meat and wine. The topic involves the parents of this wayward son bringing him to court to be prosecuted. The source features a description.